as additions. Since it's I will not be in the human
So please note that the talks are either 45 minutes or 30 minutes. So please make an effort to Please make an effort to finish 3-4 minutes earlier, so there will be some time for questions. And the second and last talk of this morning is by your and it's a great pleasure having here. He's a co-organizer of this program.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So I will give a survey of a class of methods that deals with coupling microscale models, which typically are then oscillatory, with a macroscale or a homogenized or effective model, which then more deals with averages. So this is done in collaboration, initiated with Weinan when I was there in Princeton, and then Gil Ariel, Richard Sharpe, Richard Tsai are in the University of Texas at Austin. Richard Tsai will then later in the week on Thursday clarify the things that are obscure in my lecture and things like that. So the idea is to look at multiscale problems. I'll mention a few general things about that, and then discuss this sort of framework that we have, which is a way to sort out some ideas, and also to, can be built as a foundation for analysis of these things. Take one particular application and discuss some of the issues that are of computational nature that are the difficulties in dealing with this effort. So we are interested in multiscale problems. So here is sort of within fluids a way of representing them from large-scale turbulence models, which then will be average-type equations that describe the average flow, down to the atomistic quantum mechanics, which then is highly oscillatory, describes then the vibrations of the electrons and their influence on the molecules via molecular dynamics. You could have kinetic theory, and then the Navier-Stokes equations in between. Typically, these are derived as individual equations of physical arguments, and there are very few theories connecting them in a rigorous mathematical sense here. And that is actually one of the difficulties in justifying the kind of algorithm that couple these guys over there. As was mentioned there in the previous talk by Sir Michael, that you cannot use direct numerical simulation for these kinds of high oscillatory problems. And that's because the computational cost, the number of floating point operation, if you have a small wavelength, which is then small, represented in your problem, and you could think then of band-limited function with a wide band limit, as we heard in the last lecture. And you have a given size of the domain, which could be the largest wavelength in the representation or the physical scale in that. So L over epsilon is then the number of waves that are in one direction. And then if you raise it to the power d, that would be the number of wavelength over a d-dimensional body in that case. N represents then the number of unknowns you need per wavelength to get a certain given accuracy. Typically, that is always algebraic in nature, depending on whether the method is second order or third order, whatever it is. Some problem, it is just one. R represent the algebraic relation, giving connecting the number of unknowns to the floating point operation. If we have an explicit method, it's just one certain finite number of operation. If you need, let's say, to invert a full matrix and use Gaussian animation, it would be three, still sort of algebraic, which is usually. So this is the cost here. And as was mentioned before, if now epsilon is too small, then and alpha here is always larger than d, then you will not be able to do the calculation. So we are looking at that regime here. in the case where we have something that is not done. We will now, not as was in the earlier talk, use asymptotics as a way completely to describe what goes on, but rather as a way of understanding enough to design a numerical method to do the thing here. And this is sort of the ultimate limit in the number of unknowns needed in the Shannon information theorem. And here, of course, there in the Shannon's result, there is no super oscillation, as we heard about, because we stretch it over the whole real axis in this case, and then not just the finite element, finite interval that was discussed before. Anyway, so there are two types of problems where we can handle this thing, and we call them type A and type B in this. So one is where you have the model that describes the overall phenomenon failing in one instance here. It could be a singularity there that you need to resolve. A practical thing could be that you have equations of elasticity and they work over the whole domain, but at some point you need to have a more refined model, like plasticity if there are large displacement. And even more, you may need to go down to a molecular model if there is a break, a crack develops, etc. So where you break the bonds, and this is the only model that you have that is efficient. The other one, and here's natural that by having this domain small, you may sort of beat the odds in the estimates that we had before, and thereby be able to do it. This is more challenging, where the macro scale model is not fully known throughout the domain, or you are in a physical regime where it doesn't work so well. And then you have to do something sort of everywhere. One way of doing it, and this is the type of methods that I will discuss in a service way, is then that you use sample, small domains, where you actually resolve the microscale action and then use them to infuse this information into the larger macroscale model. So typically, ideally, if you have something that describe something on the micro scale, what it could be atomistic scale. The ideal path is, of course, that there exists an effective equation from, let's say, molecular dynamic 2, Navier-Stokes in this case, and then you discretize that, indicated by the lowercase h, where you do not need to bother about the epsilon because you have had this pathway well described. So what we're looking at here is when you don't have this guy, or this guy is not valid completely, you need to use some microscale information. So the idea is then to approximate the full microscale model, but it's too expensive, so you have to do it in sort of a sample way, knowing a little bit, and this is the point I'll make here, one has to use as much as possible knowledge about the homogenized or effective equations in the setting. So what we then, this framework to look at this is not deep at all. It is just one way of coupling models, which I will mention here as macro and micro. You could have different levels. However, you need to have separate levels. That's one of the drawback here. You need separation of scale in order to deal with this here. So that is a difficulty. So the idea is to couple them and to use sparingly the microscale model. So you sample that all over the domain so it is not applied more. And the idea in the design of algorithms and also in the analysis would be that you try to use the macroscale model, even if you don't know all the details of it. If you know something, it's a variational problem, you write it as a variational principle. You then use set up the approximation with a computational method that works for the macroscale model or the structure of the macroscale model. And then you use microscale model to supply the missing data. So I'll use a conservation law here later as an example. Let me just mention a few methods of similar type. There was a talk earlier here by Kebrekidis discussing the equation-free computation here, which doesn't sort of have a this kind of framework. So it's more sort of a collection of techniques coupling macro and micro scale. One successful method is a quasi-continuum method where molecular dynamics is coupled through linear interpolation, really. You can think of it as a finite element method, but it's not just formulated. And the theory there would be the Cauchy-Born rule that couples displacements on the micro scale to the displacements on the macro scale. So the idea is to infuse some molecular dynamics features. It works then only at zero temperature. So it's a stationary. It's not appropriate for us right now. There's no oscillations in there. Gas kinetic scheme is where you use Boltzmann-type ideas in order to get the fluxes in fluid dynamics calculations. Superparametrization is something where these ideas are used actually in the Navier-Stokes equations, where I said it's not so easy because you don't have this scale separation. But if you do climates or meteorology, the atmosphere is very thin, and there is a reasonable way of separating then the vertical convection, which is then instead of using a parameter, is calculated on the fly, the vertical convection, so that you get that into the model, and we'll see a little bit later how this could be done. Ultrafast FFT I just mentioned because it's a method where you do sampling. So if you would like to go from n log n, which the FFT does, to just log n, then you can actually use these recent techniques to calculate Fourier transforms in that. Of course, you cannot get everything. So the only thing you get is if you want a finite number of the largest modes, then with arbitrary high probability and arbitrary high accuracy, you can do that in log n operation by appropriate sampling of the domains. All of them sort of have to beat this by doing some sort of sampling in this way. I mentioned that the nonlinear conservation law is the example that I've used to describe this. So think about this conservation of mass, momentum, and energy in the Euler equation here, and then you have something because you have too many unknowns for the equations here, so you have to equation of state, you have to supply that, and that is of course just an ad hoc rule that comes from experimental things describing a microscale phenomenon, the thermodynamics here. So assume we are in a situation where we don't know that, or we have some composition where we have not. We don't trust this particular rule. The idea would be then, if we know the chemical components, is that we could go down to some detailed description like molecular dynamics in order to supply the equation of state, or in order to supply the fluxes which are then built up of the equation of state. So we'll see how this would be done here, and this is sort of the way these kinds of methods work. So I'll simplify it to one dimension. Here we have our Euler equations, and the idea is then to focus on the macro scale as much as possible. So we will use a finite volume approach where the average quantities like mass within a box, etc., which here just would be the integral because our box is just the integral here in the one-dimensional way. So these are the unknowns, the averages of mass, momentum, and energy that we deal with. And then use the finite volume representation that says that the average on the top here is equal to the average on the bottom, moduli the fluxes influences over the sides. And the Budenov scheme does that in a particular way, and this is sort of one way of thinking about doing the simulation. So what Budenov suggested was, in order to calculate these fluxes, because you don't have that, here's the actually U values. Over here you have the averages known at the n level, time level, and you would like to have it on the next level. And so you need one way of doing it. And Gurunov suggested that you take your data, average data, and you replace that, sort of you from that you get piecewise constant solution. That is simple enough, so you can get an analytic solution, the Riemann solution, which then gives you the value at U over here, and you can stick it in and evaluate the F. If you had the F, now we don't have that. We are in a situation where this is not known. So what we then could do is that we start now a microscale, an oscillatory in this case, simulation, like molecular dynamics, and these are paths of individual molecules. We started off with the distribution that fits to the data we had from the macroscale. Sort of a reconstruction in the same way that Budenov did with piecewise constant in this case. And here we come up with the average number of molecules per length interval being consistent with the density, the average velocity consistent with the velocity, etc. And from that, you calculate here, as you would in a physical experiment, the flux, and feed that in. So that's sort of the coupling. Here you can just calculate to get the mass flux, the number of molecules going in one direction minus the ones going the other direction, and normalize that in a correct way. So here the microscale simulation is used, feeding in here, and we can take a macroscale step. And then the gain is, of course, that these microscale simulations are done at very small part of the macroscale domain. So that's where the gain is done. And then there are issues here which are not so easy to deal with when it comes to convergence, because we don't have a good convergence theory in molecular dynamics to continue if you're not in zero temperature where the Cauchy-Born rule is. So this is an example where we do not have a theory supporting this idea. However, there are some other cases where you can do that, where there exists sort of a good theory connecting a microscale and a macroscale problem. Then one can see very often that by embedding it is in this process of coupling macro and microscale problem, it is okay. So some inhomogenization theory, I'll take that as one example. If there are simple stochastication, that Brownian motion on the, let's say, the microscale, and this would then induce the convection equation, the heat equation on the macroscale, some dynamical systems, one can deal with that also. Typically, the error estimates are of the type that this procedure then gives an approximation of the true effective value that is bounded by some term H would then be a measure of the discretization on the core scale, on the macro scale. And then the error you make in your your micro scale model coming from sort of the initialization of the micro scale model, running it, and then doing an effective estimate of like fluxes in this particular equation we had before. The analysis usually goes along these lines, that you had your macro scale model, which needed some micro scale data, the fluxes in the early case, and the micro scale simulation that did the flux calculation needed some macro scale information, which was the initial values for each little box there. If you combine them, then it's a self-contained method in the macro scale, using the micro scale sort of hidden in there, in the D-tilde, in the effective fluxes in this case. Then you compare that with the numerical method on the same style. So this would be sort of the Goodenough type method for the right kind of flux. And here would be the effective equation, that would be Euler equation with the equations of state in this case. That is done here. So the idea is now to think about this guy, which is well established. That is a numerical method that supposedly should work for the effective equation, the true effective equation up here. And if this now is well posed, then you regard this process as a perturbation of that. So you have a little bit lax equivalence theorem idea. You have a stable process, and you approximate that in some way. If it is consistent, being that the approximation between d tilde and d bar is in the right norm measured small, and it is stable, then you would get a result like that, where c comes down from the stability of the process. This is the error on the core scale, and this is then the micro scale error that then is not destroying your algorithm because of stability, or your convergence because of stability. And in the nonlinear setting, you could do a similar thing like Strang has done for finite difference method, where you use an implicit function theorem based on then the stability of the linearized model. If we take one example, in the earlier example, we had a nonlinear conservation law, and there was fluxes that was missing, so we supplied those to a finite volume scheme. If we have a variational formulation, well, let's look at the elliptic equation with oscillatory coefficients over here, then they will induce oscillations there. So could we use this procedure? Here, there is a nice theory So you get the effective equation where the convergence is strongly in L infinity or weakly in H1, etc., to an effective homogenized solution where the epsilon is out, and this can be calculated. And that's why we could make a theory out of that as a guideline how to do these things in this setting. So the idea here that in the earlier case we had as the unknown that we needed the microscale to supply information was to get the fluxes. Here it will be to get the stiffness matrix in this case over there. So what we do is we follow the idea. We work with this sort of the homogenized equation, the macroscale equation, even if we don't know that, as far as we can. So we can formulate the bilinear form. We can express the variational form as minimizing a quadratic form. We can even discretize it by, let's say, P1 element, piecewise linear element over a triangular grid or tetrahedral grid. And then we can go further and let these integrals then be replaced by a numerical quadrature, still just formally without knowing the particular form of capital A. So what we have is that this guy should be minimized. It can be written as this expression. Unfortunately, we don't know this thing here. These are the quadrature weights in the setting. So now we have to go and use our microscale solver, which here would just be a more refined solver, not a different type as it was in the earlier case. So we replace this pointwise value with an integration, add a little square around these points over here in these cases. So now we have to assume scale separation for this to work in this setting. So this would be it. And of course you need a couple, they need to constrain the values here so that the boundary conditions are chosen so that the gradient in this little box is the same as the average gradient over this box is the same as the gradient in the large setting. So this would be the coupling in this case. The gain is that now we just need to solve in small domains around this. And those domains are large enough so that you resolve sort of the interaction between the oscillations in the solution and the oscillation in the coefficient. And that is that gives you the effective correct result in this case. You could think of it that you minimize over all degrees of freedom. And you divide it up in two parts, the degrees of freedom that are in the core scale, the nodes on the coarse grid, and then you think of you have refined everything and the rest. This is too costly. That is like solving the original problem on the fine scale. And then this, the rest, the constrained minimization here, you do not on the full domain apart from these guys, but on these small subdomains here. And why this works is the coercivity of the individual variational problems and the particular form that there exists the homogenized equation, that the solution actually to the homogenized problem of the original problem equal to a homogenized solution plus a small oscillatory part. So in the case where you have very specific form, this is irregular and one periodic or random in a correct way, there exists a homogenization theory in this case. And for those, then you could get you could prove convergence here. And here the error is just the error you make in replacing the true homogenized or effective matrix here with the one coming from this particular process. And there is a number of results depending on whether it's periodic, whether it's random, whether you know periodic or not. And a lot of this had been done then by Asir Abdul, who gave a talk earlier about this here in the program. And the idea is to use then the properties of coercivity in the original problems, and the other one is to use the fact that the analytic expansion here, asymptotic form of the oscillatory, is one, the average that you're after, and then an oscillatory part scaled in the appropriate way. This is the effect of the mismatch at the boundary. So this is what will be done over there. Now, so these were cases where We can prove things, and typically they are not so useful in the sense that that there already exist effective equations. So now we come to reality, where there are typically no proofs or very little of that sort. And so these are examples by a number of people that have looked at these things. You could, for instance, have the expansion of a plate due to heating. Let's say you are on the condition you have not been able to make measurements. There are new material of some sort. So you don't have the heat conduction. You don't have the elastic moduli. So what you could do then is write it again like a finite volume method, if you like, on this two-dimensional plate, and then get the fluxes, which then would give you the heat flux, etc., on the sides by doing molecular dynamics simulations on every side. And these would be 3D MD simulation, and that's what's done over here. So then you get the heat distribution from a point source in the middle after some time. These are small errors that you may not see. That tells about the displacement over here. And this would be one of the constrained. So you do that with thermostats on the boundaries to get constrained molecular dynamic simulation to do that. This would be one way. It's, again, a fluid case, so this is a solid case, a fluid case where you have a multi-phase flow, one phase over here, another over there. This is the pipe, walls of the pipe, and you have the interface there. Let's assume that you are satisfied with Navier-Stokes in the individual domain, and also that you're satisfied that the surface tension can be described by curvature on the interface. You still need to do something. Navier-Stokes require no slip boundary conditions here, and there is actually a slip at the slip line, the contact line over here. Otherwise, the liquid would stick to the surface. So there is a slip of molecules here. So what you could do is that you can, instead of having an ad hoc rule for the attachment angle, etc., here, you could do a little microscale simulation, molecular dynamics, right around a box over here, where you get the driving with the velocity that comes from the Navier-Stokes calculation, and you will get the slip velocity and the contact angle out as a result of the microscale simulation. Combustion is a mechanical system. I'll mention a little bit more of epitaxial growth to again see how this could play out in practice, where you have oscillations on the micro scale and you think of a continuum. So the idea is in some semigrad production, it's done by epitaxial growth. So you have a substrate, then you let atoms come down on that. It's hot, they move around and hop between different locations on here, and when they connect to each other, then they become more stable, and then more atoms connect, so they form a layer, a monolayer, an island over here. When it becomes larger, the next level starts to form in this process. So one way of describing this is to try to do as much as possible on the macro scale, on the continuum scale. So you can use just the heat equation, the diffusion equation, for the distributions of ad atoms, that they're called, on the surface over here, and then represent the boundary of the island by some interface tracking methods, like a level set method. So this would be the idea. So the model would be to, as a macro scale model, have the diffusion, and then track the interface with a macro, with a level set method. The problem is that the velocity, how this interface grows, depends on how the atoms attached to the island, and that is a microscale phenomenon. So therefore, you need to do something, and let's say we could use kinetic Monte Carlo in describing the microscale over there. So here would then be, if you look from the top, island growth as a function of time. They grow, they merge. This would be them seen in some sort of angle, 3D-wise, and this would be the representation on the macro scale of the islands by level set functions. So the zero level set of these blob-like function would then is what you see over here in this way. So the idea is to do that and then solve the heat equation out in the white domain over here in between. So the idea is to find now the velocity that is needed in the level set formulation over here, in the Hamilton-Jacobi equation that describes the evolution of these guys, by at a number of points around the boundary, then perform microscale simulation on the atomistic level. So here you have these atoms hopping with certain probabilities, different probabilities if they are attached here than if they are free. They can then hopefully then follow the physics, depends on how well you have done your probabilities there. And this then, let this grow for some time. You estimate the growth, and then you come back to the macro scale model and infuse that velocity. So the steps would be, given the velocity, you update the level set function, you solve the heat equation, and then you use that information to set up the kinetic Monte Carlo simulation with the correct densities in this case. Now, spend a little bit of time in the end of it here to discuss some of the difficulties that come into to the formulation. So let's some of the new techniques over here. So one thing one needs to do is to estimate the data correctly, and that is sort of as hard as if you have sort of a physical experiment like we had in the conservation law here. But usually that is possible. We needed to initialize value, which comes to the reconstruction down here, and that is may not be completely physical because there may be processes going on that we will not be able to follow. So you need that after some time the system relaxes to the correct state. In a sense, if you think of the Boltzmann equation, it sort of relaxes into a Maxwellian distribution if it would be stationary, or some quasi-stationary state. So therefore, you start estimating after some time. If this, again, this is a scale separation phenomenon, it's not there, you cannot do anything. Boundary condition, you would like to have absorbing boundary condition, so you can choose a domain that is small. Ideally, this would stretch to a very large domain, and that is costly, so you would like to reduce that. So for all these processes, you need to find boundary conditions that makes it well posed and still could work in this setting. So is the reconstruction, which is a difficult state, when you have your macro variable, the large scale variables, you need to come up with the microscale variables, and in, for instance, in the flux case, the conservation law case, you would then match the number of molecules to the density. You would match their average velocity to the density. You would otherwise put them out randomly to come as close as possible to the physical state, and you would then match the energy as the deviation then from the average velocity squared, scaled in the correct way. So these are all features that needs to be done on a detailed thing. So even if there was sort of a general framework idea, in order to get something done, one has to do a detailed study on all these things. But that's so for most of the methods. Let's say finite difference method, you say just take derivatives and replace it with differences. That doesn't tell you how to do it. It just gives some indication of where to look. And the same with finite element, that the residual should be orthogonal to the test function. It's very easy to say, but to get something out of it, then one need to look at the detail. Why not do it sequential? That is, why not do these calculations a priori and get let's say, and tabulate the result and then use them so? And that one should do if that is the it's roughly the same approach in a sense, if that is more cost effective. So you have two possibilities. Either do the microscale simulation ahead of time. Let's say if you would like to have conductivity as a function of temperature, and you tabulate that for temperature as you would in an experiment to find that out, and that is fine, and you stick it in. Or you do it concurrent, as we said over here. Sort of every half step, you update your microscale simulation. And that depends on which is most efficient. If we take the epitaxial growth problem, I said, let's the probabilities be given. Assume that you don't have that you need to calculate that from, let's say, density function theory or some ab initio type simulation. It is better to do that before, because the only unknown that you need to think about there is the temperature. That is what describes that. And the setup, the configuration. Do I have one nearest neighbor, two nearest neighbor, or maybe a little bit of environment? So it's a finite number of states, and then you have a continuum dependent on temperature. This is easier to tabulate and easier than do this kind of calculation in the two-dimensional sort of surface versus time space that we need to do otherwise. On the other hand, the simulation that I described, it's much better to do that concurrent, on the fly, because otherwise you have a four-dimensional space to tabulate with the densities on the top of the island, the densities below, the temperature, and the angle, because it depends on how it sits in the lattice, the overall angle there. And that is a much larger space to do the calculation in than just the two-dimensional space that we did in the experiment. So that whether you do one or the other depends on the overall setting. Need for scale separation was obvious here, and that is one of the major drawbacks of all of these kinds of methods. If you don't have that, if it fills up the spectrum completely and you have no control, you can't do anything about it. That is then what Shannon theorem says. But you might have some other way of understanding, some structure that you can use. And here is sort of the poor man's view that we say that we resolve the microscale here. We don't know really exactly how its structure is, but we know that something goes on a smaller scale that then influence a much larger scale in this way. And that is where it works. So that is one thing that is important. So I'll take one aspect here that there will be more talks about in this session. And this part here of this approach, Richard Tsai will describe in more detail than on Thursday. So, the aspect here is just that very often you know your macro scale variables given from physics. Like mass, momentum, and energy is a good way of describing a continuum for the conservation law. And on the micro scale, you had then given also by physics molecules that move around. If you're given a system here which is oscillatory, for instance, or dissipative but stiff, so things happen on very short time scales, then and that's all what you're given, then it's not so clear what should be your macro scale variables if they are needed. So the way how this kind of approach deals with that is first to make some simple suggestion, which we will then see may need to be augmented in some way. So how would this approach here deal with the dynamical system? So the idea is to do a local simulation on the micro scale. So you do a local simulation on the microscale in order to get effective F, that's sort of the average force, the average right-hand side in this thing. And then you have a numerical method that marches on the macro scale that describes sort of the rest of the system, the long-range effect in this case. So this would be the way of doing this. And these are other techniques that are based on the same theme in a thought. The first that I heard of was Jermund Dahlqvist had this used in the early 70s as one example for the students. He was thinking of the dissipative case, not the oscillatory case, where he let people run some scheme, Euler or some simple thing, and see that you can actually march with much larger time step and than what the astability sort of analysis would give you if you just did this calculation with a small time step to get the F at those times. Which is not, then you don't need an average in this way. And then there are many methods to develop that. So the idea what you would do, let's say you have a sun, the Earth and the moon spinning around, you would do a detailed calculation of the moon spinning around the Earth, calculate, and this is the Earth moving over here, calculate the forces, take a large step, and then start from there. So this would be here, and then you take a large step over here. So this would be the idea, and here's the convergence study. So this we don't have any. Theory for. There are some details involved here. So the average will be a local average, and it practically you do that by approximating the integral with a kernel, which has nice properties, smoothness and moment conditions, so that it approximates the pointwise value of the average in a good way. And then one could, for a linear problem and a limited class of nonlinear problem, by this naive procedure that you just start You take your microscale value and move them with the average according to the macro scale numerical ODE method, and then start as it is. If you do this pendulum you saw there before, it doesn't work this way, because there is a resonance between this coefficient over here and the solution. So what is this? This is a Kapitza pendulum. If you take a regular pendulum, of course, it swings down like this. But if you oscillate fast here, then you also get stable state on the top. So it will swing back and forth on the top like that. And if you need to simulate that, you need, of course, to describe in some way, analytically, or in this way, numerically, the small oscillations, because otherwise it will just fall down. So if you want to simulate this thing. And the resonance between the coefficient here and this function is important. And if you do it sort of blindly there, it doesn't work. When you start off, you may be off in the oscillations. And therefore, you cannot show convergence, and it doesn't converge practically either. You need more variables here. So in this case, you need to add some other variable, like, for instance, the average velocity. And you give an evolution equation for that. And you constrain the simulation so you by using this variable. So that gives you, this extra variable gives you a way of starting off at the right location if you use that as a constraint. And in this case, one can then use the same theory of theory and asymptotic theory that is used in order to prove these oscillations to actually get a rigorous proof also for the convergence in this case. Levy is one of Moser's students that did that. So this is the final picture here. So this is this Fermi-Pasna-Ulam problem. And here with a large number of springs, this is a soft spring location here, which is the order of one. If you don't know this problem, I will not describe it over here. Some people here has worked on this in different ways. And this is one example you can run with this process. And Richard Tsai will talk about this later. So the important part is that you need to see what are the slow variables that you need to track in order to do this correctly and get convergence. You can do that analytically. If you have a control over how the function looked like, you can compute relevant moments and use those as constraint. Or you could use a preset form, which you then numerically calculate, which will then be the slow variables. But this is just a teaser for next talk. The rest was describing the PD setting over there. And there's conclusion, nothing particular, just that this is a possible way of doing it. There is extra rigorous analysis for a number of problems which are not practical, and there is a number of practical things which are no rigorous proofs. Thank you.
Very nice. Any questions?
Stefanos. Are there cases in the real world where there are no rigorous proofs where the analytic method can be compared with experimental results?
Sorry. The numerical method.
The numerical, yes. Numerical and experimental results.
Yes, yes, yeah. For instance, in this epitaxial growth case, that was, and what they measure then was, it's not so easy to do this during the process, but they can measure the length of the interface of the island, and one can look at that. Of course, there are so many parameters that you can adjust in the numerics, so it's. Easy to match the data they have, so quality I'm not so sure. But that's one example where we have done that.
Can you comment on parallelization of these methods, which are more efficient for massively parallel?
Oh, that is, of course, I didn't mention that, but this is, of course, a good thing with this kind of thing, is if we don't take the OD case, which always is a curse when it comes to parallelization, but if we take all the other ones, is that the microscale simulations are not connected. They're only connected through the macroscale step, and that is a way, and that's why this approach is good. So all the microscale could be paralyzed, and whether you can paralyze within them, that sort of depends on the approximation. But it's very well set up because you do a number of different simulations that are completely independent in the simulation. So it's, what do you call it?
Yes, please. In the background section, you stated what you could prove, right?
Yes.
Did I get it right that you said that there was periodic case, but also for a random case, you said that you have some kind of epsilon delta error bound?
That's correct. Yeah.
Does it, I mean, it's...
Well, that's these states essentially where you have the analytic convergence theory for elliptic equation with stochastic coefficients.
It's
nothing new here. I mean, it is just applying, but you need them on the right in the right form in the right norm.
In a non-numerical homogenization, when you have epsilon but don't have delta, in periodic case you do have error bound, but in random case I thought it sort of there is only convergence.
Yes, there is only convergence, but you can estimate what the convergence related to the correlation length, how much more you need to take in order to get convergence.
You have to assume something else, right, and instead of underlying random medium.
So in that sense, the estimate would be...
The homogeneous ergodic, then there is some rate of mixing of something,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. So you have to assume that those cases.
Okay.
And then the result is with the probability close enough to one, you can get these results. And that's so the order estimate is a little bit different there, of course. It's not, it is only with probability or close to one.
Any more questions?
Is it possible to adapt the method to be able to see phase transitions when you have a new oscillatory phase being created? Mm. Therefore, a boundary is created sometime during the phenomenon where the behavior on the other side has a different microscale structure.
Yeah, that's an important feature, and we haven't done anything like that. Because as I described, it was type A and type B. Type A, when you have what localized, and then you know that it is there, the crack is there, for instance, and you lose molecular dynamic. And then type B, where you find something with microscale simulation all over. What you're saying is that I have some situation which then transform into some other. So then you need adaptivity. You need to know what are the conditions for this to happen and where you impose this. So that is sort of a little bit outside of the regime here. But that would be, of course, very important. So we had a conference a couple of weeks ago over where hurricanes was the case. Can one sort of, once the hurricanes are developed, you could do this, use some symmetries and do simulation. This is close to the super parameterization idea that the meteorologists do. But the question of the genesis is very difficult because you would need a careful calculation in order for the hurricane to start, and you cannot afford to do that over a large domain. So that's a major problem. Yeah.
Very good. Time for lunch. Thank you very much.